Welcome to Rework, a podcast by 37 Signals about the better way to work and run your business. I'm your host, Kimberly Rhodes, and I'm joined by Jason Fried and David Heinemeier Hansen, co-founders of 37 Signals. Well, it's been a little over a month since we launched this new product umbrella called Once, the first product campfire. So I thought we would talk about it, what we've learned in the last month with this non-SaaS product. Guys, has this gone as well as you thought, better than you thought? What are you thinking in terms of the results so far?
Well, so it's interesting because we don't really have expectations. We have some, like, we want it to do well. But, you know, our take is that this is a brand new model and we've sold well over 1,000 copies so far. And like, that's a pretty damn good thing. Now, if we thought this would be a replacement for SaaS, the answer would be it's not doing as well as that. If we thought this was an answer to a first attempt at a new model, I think it's doing pretty well. Sales have definitely slowed down since we initially launched, which is also what always happens with SaaS too. Like, you launch a product, it's out there, everyone's talking about it, then it gradually slows down after that. And then you have to figure out how to maintain and grow. So we're in that phase now. So I would say the launch was hugely successful in terms of the first 30 days, 60 days. And now it's like the long slog, which is what happens with all products. So I think that's the realistic answer, is that we're in the slog now, which is that we have to figure out a way to keep, you know, keep this front of mind, let people know this exists, continue to promote it, continue to improve it. And also the whole model itself, the thing is that's interesting about this is we're launching two things. We're launching Campfire as a product, and then Once as a model, as an idea, as a new brand, essentially. So we've got a few different things to promote. We've already started working on the second Once product. So I think collectively, the best way to look at this would be to look back a year from now versus looking at it like right now. And we'll see how it all does at that point.
I think this point about expectations is a good one, because when we initially launched Basecamp back in 2004, first, that was a new model. SaaS was still very nascent. There'd been a handful of other SaaS products out there, but SaaS as a concept wouldn't even get coined for several more years. We had to convince customers to put in a credit card online. We had to convince our bank to even allow us to accept subscription-based software. They thought that was very weird at the time. And if you had looked at, say, the first 30 days of Basecamp's rollout, like, it's a drop in the ocean of what we were able to do with Once. But expectations do inflate. So we were thrilled when Basecamp hit $5,000 in ARR after, I think, whatever it was, 3 weeks or whatever. We sold that in like a few minutes when Campfire went live, what used to take weeks. But obviously, we're a more established company now. We've been around for longer. And I think this is one of the reasons why it is so hard for established companies to launch something truly new, to break outside of their model, because they will inevitably compare everything they launch to what they already have. This is why the innovator's dilemma can be known and yet also does apply, or also applies at the same time to everyone, even when they know about it, that the nascent new model takes longer to become forceful, to be able to make real change. And most large companies just don't have the patience to wait it out. We pointed at Google many times over where I forget what the heuristic I heard was. I think something about, like, unless the business does 100 million in 18 months, it's essentially a failure and it needs to do hundreds of millions after that. Otherwise, it will get killed. Now, thankfully, we don't have any of those pressures in the sense that we have patience. We can allow a new model to grow slowly. Everything we've done ever has grown slowly. If you look at our audience, it's grown very slowly. If you look at our initial launch of Basecamp, it's grown very slowly. So being able to launch Once and have this amazing launch, initial launch, but then also realizing, you know what, it's not going to overtake the SaaS revenues of freaking Basecamp, a industry standard for 20 years that have been phenomenally successful. And we cannot do that comparison. If we do, we will never launch anything truly novel or new. We will only launch variations of what is already there. You see that in the movie business. There's been, I think, 28 sequels, prequels, serials of Marvel movies because there's such a risk intolerance in that business at this point, and everything gets compared to that. The other thing here is We don't spend, I think, a Marvel movie cost like $500 million. We didn't spend $500 million creating Campfire. We spent basically one designer, two programmers for the bulk of it, and then a little bit of a boost right at the end. That's a pretty modest investment. I think there's actually, I haven't done the full math on it, but we might actually already be at break even just if you look at the time spent, salaries, whatever, overhead and on it, and already be into the gravy on it because the model is so different. But what I evaluate things on and what I find far more interesting is that when we set out to do once, it sounded like a very quirky idea. And some of the technical challenges that we were faced, like how do you update software that lives on someone else's machine and do it in a way where you don't break those machines and then what do you do? How do you fix it? Have been solved. Like it's a raging success in terms of validating the fundamental shift in terms of the setup process. I mean, we benchmark against the likes of WordPress and other CMS systems and so on. And you go to read the installation docs on those things, and they're like just reams of pages. Oh, you got to do this, and you got to do this. We reduced it to one command line. One command line we could paste into a freaking email, and that was all someone needed to run to be up and running. And not only did that happen successfully, like literally well over 1,000 installations happened like that, and we got a tiny modicum of support requests off it. I thought it was going to be far, far harder. I thought the technical challenges we were trying to tackle were going to be highly difficult and they were going to take quite some time to suss out. I didn't think we were going to spike the ball on it this early in the process. So that part of the equation is really satisfying. And so is the early, as it always is, adopters who take it the furthest. There's a handful of super accounts, if you want to call them that, super users who've taken the product and extended it in all the ways you like dream that someone could make extensions to a product that they own. This guy, Daniel, who's running a community on it, has extended it with features we didn't even ship it with. There's like a counter of how many people in the room. There's like changes to the design. He's changed the login system, all of these things. And I just go like, that's so cool. It is so cool to see that. That's such a huge validation. Again, it's at the miniature level when you contrast it to the success of something like Basecamp, but that's how everything starts. Literally everything that's good and worthwhile started small. The hard part is, do you have the patience to stick through it? Now, of course, it also needs to grow. I mean, if you just flatline it at no sales forever, that's also not, it's not like that's a success criteria in and of itself. But I think the bigger risk for established companies is that they don't have the patience to see something through and they don't have the stomach to realize, you know what, new businesses start small.
Yeah, the other thing I want to add is, the other thing that's interesting about it for me is that, so currently it's priced at $299 once, which is equivalent to 3 years of Hay. So if you sign up for Hay, it's $99 a year. The amount of effort, energy, people, expense, and investment we need to make to sustain Hay for 3 years to make basically $300, and the amount of effort, all that stuff we have to sustain for Campfire to make $300 once, Campfire for to us is a massive bargain. So selling one copy of Campfire is a huge, huge step forward in terms of the amount of income per effort. Let's say units, if we're kind of figuring out how that would play out. So while sales obviously spike and then slow, we're selling thousands and thousands of dollars of Campfire every week. And the amount of effort required is so low that it's all gravy from here on out, which is not the case for SaaS tools, where SaaS tools, you have to continue to maintain, develop, host, all the customer service stuff. Running an email service is not easy. It's incredibly hard and complicated. We don't have any of that overhead at all. Zero, basically. So even if sales are slower in some ways than, let's say, a SaaS product, ultimately, the gains are significantly more when you factor it all in. So I think that there's a lot of different ways to look at this. And because this is a new model, there are different lenses to look at it through. And I think, you know, part of this is also time and seeing how it all shakes out. But I would say we're quite happy with how this has started out.
I'm also just happy because it's fun to do. So we get to do fun things that we're interested in doing for the sake of them being fun and interesting to do. And this had a ton of really juicy, interesting, novel technical challenges, business model challenges, support challenges, design challenges. And being able to pursue that for the sake of it is the luxury of running a profitable long-term business. I mean, I want the business to do well. I always want the business to do well. There's just like an aesthetic in me about the shape of what a well-run business looks like. And that's important. But I'm also at the stage where like, I also just want to enjoy myself. If being in business for 25 years have earned us anything, it should be the capacity to follow our whims and enjoy ourselves and learn more. This is the other thing I always find when we dive into a new domain. I have a million ideas now of how we could make hay better, how we could make Basecamp better, how we could go back to what are currently the big money makers at the company and take some of those lessons onward. I would have paid for that privilege. You didn't even have to pay me. I would have paid to be able to spend the amount of time we did developing this for all the lessons and the interest and the excitement and so forth. So this is one of the core tactics that I've tried to cultivate in myself on how to approach business. Be not just content, but happy with all possible outcomes. If this blows up and goes to the moon and we sell 10 million copies of Campfire, wow, that sounds fun. We sell 100,000 copies over the next 10 years. Sounds great too. That's a bunch of gravy. We sell 200 copies. Like it didn't work, right? Like we were past that in a few hours. But let's just say we only sold 200 copies. I would still have gone like, yeah, I enjoyed the journey. That was great. Blessed. Count my blessing that I can do stuff like that, that we can take chances. And that if it had only sold 200 and that was it, and it sales just went to zero and so on, you could still look at like this is a success in terms of, is this worth my remaining time here on this little blue dot? And when we get to that, it's just such a liberating feeling. It's such a liberating feeling. And I see the opposite in entrepreneurs all the time when I talk to them. A lot of them are very anxious people. They're very anxious about the success that they still have to claw in. They have investors, they have backers, they have their own drive. They have all these things for like the big success to come. And I look at our business and go like, yeah, that's really curious. Like that's not a factor that I think about on a daily basis, maybe even a weekly basis, maybe even a monthly basis. Again, there's an aesthetic about doing business well. I think that's valuable. And obviously we can't do these things if we don't have a fundamental business that can allow us to do it. But to be liberated from thinking about that on a daily basis, man, that is one of the biggest trophies I could imagine from this contest we've been in for 2 decades.
Okay, so you mentioned this being fun, and now we're working on another fun version of Once. The team has started working on product number 2. Jason, can you tell us anything about how you decided what this new product was going to be?
We kind of had maybe 3 ideas for what could be next. And we actually decided to pick the one that we wanted to use ourselves the most. So I think in some ways it may not be as commercially viable, perhaps, as maybe one of the other 2 ideas that we thought about. But we're okay with that. To David's point, like, it's okay. Like, we actually want this for ourselves. We're going to use it anyway. What we found was this, I can't really tell you what it is yet, of course. I mean, you know what it is, but tell the listeners. But what it's doing is like, we already do this. What we're building is something we already do, but we do it in like 4 different ways with 4 different tools in 4 different places. And it feels like we can really condense this into one thing. And I also think that there's a lot of people who want to do this sort of thing that it's way too hard to do today. And so we're going to kind of gamble on that and see if there's even demand for it. I don't know. We want it ourselves. So that is number 1 on this one. And then it's kind of fun just to kind of say like, let's build the thing that we really want ourselves first. So that's what we're doing with number 2. And then, after that, we'll pick a 3rd and do that. And then I think at that point, you know, we'll have, we'll be in this for maybe 8 months at that point, under once or something like that. And we'll see how things are going, you know, and maybe it's going super, super well. Maybe we pause and just sell those three things for a while and get back to building another SaaS product. Maybe we do another once and a SaaS product at the same time. Like, we don't have to choose one or the other. This is what we're doing for the next handful of months, and we'll see where it all shakes out and how it shakes out. The other thing is that we know that we're early on this to begin with. Like, it seems inevitable to me that this is the way things are going to slide. There'll be more and more products that are available to be sold directly and not have to be subscriptions, but we might be 2 years early. So it might be a matter of, let's build a bunch of things. Let's see how it takes off. Let's see what happens. And then we might catch another wave as more and more people get comfortable with this sort of thing. We'll have to see how it all plays. So that's number two and perhaps number three. And then also just like, let's see what happens.
I think catching that wave is one of those things that's just out of your control. When we launched the original version of Campfire, that was in 2005, I believe. Maybe six, five. I don't know. 10 years too early. Seven at least. That was how long it took until Slack came around and blew up the category. Because that product was just, it was a great product. And it was timed perfectly well. We had been in that category well in advance. And it's funny because I remember us having conversations in maybe 08 or 09. What should we do about Campfire? Like, the product isn't selling like hotcakes. We know how valuable it is. We know how important it is to have real-time chat as one of the tools, especially if you're a remote company. And at that time, remote was also a quirky, weird thing to do. So we were really early on a number of these insights. And we looked at that product and we're like, we're not sure. Like, what if we make the product better? We invest more in the product. We polish the features. We build more features up. Would that have changed anything? And I actually don't think it would. I think sometimes these things have to come together right at the right time. Basecamp was the other example where we launched it in 2004 and right away. Yep. The market is there. The market is ready. They're willing to pay. Boom. It takes off like wildfire right away. Where are we with this? That's what I find so delicious in some sense. Like, you don't know what the future holds. You don't know we're just on the cusp of a major revolution in how software is sold on the internet. It very well could be. And these tipping points, they're incredibly hard, if not impossible, to predict. And I think the best you can do is to identify things you believe are right and then go like, you know what? I'm going to cast the dice. Like, it's going to be a gamble either way. But if we believe that there's something here, and I absolutely believe there is, I just talked to a handful of people at the South by Southwest. And when I talk about the model opportunities, if you look at it that way, where, hey, here's a product on the market. You have to pay for it on a monthly basis. If you have just a few hundred users on it, it's going to literally cost you thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars a year. Here's another option that is literally 99.9% cheaper. It actually sounds like a scam. Like, whenever someone says, I'll sell you whatever you got for 99.9% cheaper, that sounds like a scam. And that, to me, is where all the excitement is, right? That's what a real breakthrough looks like. If you had, again, gone back and said, like, yeah, do you know those six horses you need to do to pull the carriage here? I can replace them with one steam thingy. They would have gone like, what do you mean a steam thingy? Like, I need six horses. I could do better if I had eight. And they need to be fed and they all these things. And you'd be like, no. I can reduce the cost of shipping these goods across America by like two orders of magnitude, if not four. And it'll get there in a tenth of the time. You would have gone like, yeah, sounds like a scam. But then you see the goddamn locomotive going. And you go like, huh, I guess the world just changed. Now, that was, of course, like an epoch defining moment. We're not building the steam engine here. But there's some comparisons in how difficult it is to convince consumers of a new model if the model is radically better. Because you can't actually use words. Because those words will sound hollow and they will sound like a scam because the consumer won't believe you. There's a great guy, Roy Sutherland, I think, who talks about this with low-cost airline carriers. How did Ryanair and the rest of them convince consumers that they could fly from London to Barcelona for a quarter of the cost. The consumer is likely to think, if I just see those two prices in these two airlines, that like it's got to be because those Ryanair folks don't maintain their aircraft. They buy cheap secondhand stuff. It's probably going to drop out of the sky. To overcome that hurdle, they had to actually be explicit about all the things you're not getting. You can't get checked luggage. You don't know which seat you're going to get. We're going to kind of be like mean dicks about it when you check in. Like all of these things were actually in service of convincing the customer that this was real, that it wasn't a scam, and the money weren't being saved on maintenance of the airline. I think we are in a little bit of that, that the deal is so good that it's actually unbelievable to a lot of people. And that part of how you deal with that is one time you stick around. Most scams, they come and then they go. And people will correctly go like, yeah, I'm really glad I didn't hop on that hullabaloo. Here, if we stick around, and you know what? There's still a once in a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. That might be one of those things that make the domino thing tip. This is what I love about some of these long-running bootstrap stories too. If you look at MailChimp, for example. MailChimp was a side product, a side hustle for the two founders for 4 years. It did not really take off, I think, at least according to the one timeline I saw, until they were 6 or 7 years into it. That's kind of wild. But they stuck to it and sold the business for like $20 billion or something in the end. I look at those things and go like, do you know what? I love it. I love that someone has the patience to plant a seed and go like, yeah, I'm not going to have a huge oak tomorrow. That's just not how most things work. These seeds take a while, but it's such a pleasure to plant things. This is how I know I'm getting old, by the way, because I'll look at trees and go like, man, that tree is larger than last year. And like, look at the leaves. And
gardening metaphors, always gardening metaphors.
Yes,
it's always a bad
gardening
sign.
Metaphors,
a good sign,
right?
Actually, a good sign.
I think this is what happens when you turn 40. Like that's just like a law of nature or something. But we've had the same thing too. We planted a lemon tree 4 years ago. And the first year, it didn't really bear fruit. The second year, there were a little bit of stuff. This year, holy smokes, we should put the photo I took yesterday in the show notes. It's just this lush lemon tree with these enormous lemons off. And I take them off and I smell the lemon. And it's incredible. Like the satisfaction you actually get for something that takes longer, it's just out of control. If that lemon tree had like been a shake and bake and it popped up and like 5 minutes after I put the seed in, I would have had these lemons. The lemons would not have felt valuable. They would not have felt like an accomplishment. It feels like an accomplishment to hold that damn lemon because I saw the tree go in looking all puny with no fruit. And now 4 years later, I see the lemons and they're glorious. So yeah, that's what I like.
Last question before we wrap it up. I know when you guys decided pricing for Campfire, it was just like, make it up. Now, I know it hasn't been that long of a period of time, but looking back, are you like, yep, that was the right number? Or are you starting to think as we do the next product, that pricing number might need to be different?
Well, I think the next product can be priced differently anyway. They're distinctly different things. I don't know. I have no idea. I think $299 felt really good. It seemed like a good price. It might be too cheap. Some people might not take it seriously. It might be too expensive for others. I think we'd like to play around with this. And that's what's really nice about downloadable software is that we don't screw up anything that's already happened. So like customers who already bought it, they own it. If we move it up to $399 now, new customers will pay $399. Old customers aren't going to be happy or sad. They just like they paid for what they paid. If we move it down to $99, some people might be upset that like, well, if I would have waited, it would have been $99. But like, that's just how it goes, right? But there's not this like month-to-month payment thing, which makes it very complicated. It's very hard to play with subscription-based pricing when you have a lot of customers who are already paying one thing every month and they look at the price every month and things are changing. So I think we should play around. I think we should try to run sales, which we never really do for Basecamp. We did it for Hay for Black Friday or Cyber Monday, wherever the heck it was. And that pushed numbers nicely for a minute. So I think we should do some sales. We should try to triple the price and see what happens and kind of play. But it wouldn't surprise me that it's too cheap for some. Like to David's point, in a sense, there's this sense of like, it's too good to be true is a price thing too. It's too cheap. And in fact, Basecamp, I think we run into this with Basecamp all the time too. I know we do actually. I know for some people, Basecamp is too expensive because they're used to using stuff for free. Okay, fine. But there's other places, other companies I know, I've talked to many of them who are like, we spend $15,000 per employee per year on like this CAD software we need to draft, whatever. How can I just pay 15 bucks a month? Like, there's no way this can't be good. Like, they're just not used to things being able to be good at 15 bucks a month or at $2.99 unlimited users, which is what Basecamp offers. And they can have 3,000 people using it for $2.99 a month all in. They're just not used to that. So again, we're fighting with some comfort and some norms. So, you know, who knows? Pricing is very interesting. I love it. I think we should play with it more. And Once gives us an opportunity to really, really do that in a way that subscription pricing doesn't.
All right. Well, with that, we're going to wrap it up. Rework is a production of 37 Signals. You can find show notes and transcripts on our website at 37signals.com/podcast. Full video episodes are on YouTube and Twitter. And if you have a question for Jason or David about a better way to work and run your business, leave us a voicemail at 708-628-7850. You can also text that number or send us an email to rework@37signals.com.